Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want a surf, soldier?
Yes, sir.
That's good, son, because you're either surf or fight.
Tom Thayer.
The man brings you to your feet.
Color analyst for Bears Radio on WBBM.
I just think you got to stay threatening, and I keep using the word vertical. That's how you're going to threaten this defense.
9-year NFL veteran.
McMahon gets it outside of him.
There was no one there. There was no one within 10 yards of Walter Payton on that one.
Tom Thayer was out in front of Payton with a good block.
Starting right guard for your 1985 Chicago Bears.
Jeff Stover was inside. He was handled excellently by Tom Thayer.
You probably still have the Black and Blues Brothers poster hanging on your wall.
Hilgenberg is the center. Thayer and Bortz at guard, and Van Horn and Covert the tackles.
Tom Thayer.
The confidence that this team built in themselves, I gotta believe there's a positive road ahead for the Chicago Bears.
Tom Thayer with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
Where the Hour is brought to you by U.S. Water Heating Solutions. They service any type, tank, tankless, or boiler system for homes and businesses. Our guy Tom Thayer, part of the Bears Radio Network, our teammate here at The Score and WBBM with us by way of the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Tom, how you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing well, man. I hope everything's going good with you. I miss seeing you guys eyeball to eyeball on our crosstalk opportunities, but, you know, this is just as good during these trying times.
Yes, during these trying times. You know what, Tom, it's been so long. I miss Dan Bernstein. That's how much I'm missing human communication.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Okay, maybe on second thought. The draft is happening tomorrow night, and there's quite a buzz for it, more than usual, because of the cessation of sports 6 weeks ago. The Bears not going to have a pick tomorrow night unless Ryan Pace does something wild. What is your wish for 43 and 50? What do you want them to do on night two?
Ryan's did a nice job of identifying starting safeties out of the draft. And I really think when you talk about having the highest paid safety in the middle of the field and Eddie Jackson, it'd be nice to have a lower paid rookie contract safety next to him for a couple years until, you know, you have to make the decision down the road. And so, you know, you got to get a safety. You got to fortify the cornerback position. I know they've done it a little bit in the offseason, but there's too much uncertainty in the players that they've signed to get a guaranteed going against Aaron Rodgers and the quarterbacks within the division. So, selfishly, you'd like to say offensive line, but they've addressed that a little bit. And so defensive back is, you know, my pleasure, even if they went 1-2, safety, corner safety.
What do they like so much about Kevin Tolliver as a corner? Because he's I think corner and safety, and Danny and I have talked about that, definitely a need for draft or free agent if that were a possibility. But what about Tolliver? Is he better than we know?
Not yet. You know, I mean, he's okay. Definitely has the template. He's got the experience. He's got the big game opportunities throughout his college career. But you know, he's got the size to play, you know, against a bigger receiver in the NFL, but it's going to be up to Kevin Tolliver, and this is going to be a really challenge to him because he's not going to be addressed by the Bears training staff and weight coach on an everyday process of getting you into the weight room and watching what you're doing. You got to go back there and hope that he's finally matured to the level that he knows how much work he has to put into his body in the offseason to be ready for the season, if you want even want to be considered a starter. Because, you know, Mac, I think that some of these guys can show up day one of active football, and they'll tell you the exact message of what they've been doing, nothing or something. And I think if you get a position that fragile of that type of athleticism needed, that type of conditioning needed, and if you come in there and you're huffing and puffing and you're 15 pounds overweight, you kind of told me what you've been doing.
Tom, I'm surprised you're confident in whatever the Bears have done on the offensive line. What do you think? Where do you think they've upgraded?
Juan Castillo is going to bring in a new thing. I'm not happy. I don't think everything is cured. I think that's going to start with OTAs and training camp when they finally get together and they try to instill the mentality of an aggressive running game into the minds of all the offensive linemen. I'm just glad that, you know, the guy they brought in from Seattle, Afadi, is that how you say his name?
Afadi.
So, you know, if you bring that guy in and he shows that he's got the willingness to go out there and every Sunday do battle, but maybe you can put him into a comfort zone or bring him into that right guard position. And then you got a little versatility with Cody Whitehair. You know, I hear good things out of the weight room by James Daniels of his strength gains and stuff like that. So, I don't think it's cured, but if they take a different approach, to what they want to do and try to accomplish in the running game, maybe that can help everybody get a little better.
Yeah, you sure were sputtering, stumbling out of the gate there with that answer on an upgraded.
Well, no, I'm not going. Okay, this is a Super Bowl offensive line,
right?
But it starts at top. You know, that's the first thing that Matt Nagy addressed in the off season was the fact that training camp is going to be a lot different. That there, it's going to be a more physical approach to the practices and everything else. So, if you can do that, and then you get an offense and defensive front that starts, you know, getting some of those calluses on their forehead and they understand when it's third and two, they got a bread and butter play that no matter what the defense shows us, we're going to be able to get it. I don't think there was a time last year that when there was a third and three or less that when they broke the huddle, but I was 100% confident that they could line up in a play that even if the opponent knew they were going to run it, they could, you know, get the yards needed. So, no, with personnel changes, it also starts with the coaching philosophy.
It's so interesting to me, Juan Castillo and Harry Hiestand, because to talk to any Bears people, Notre Dame people, Harry Hiestand is a god amongst offensive line coaches, but then Juan Castillo is going to be the guy who comes in with a commitment to the running game and going to solve the problems. Like, I don't exactly know how to make sense of that, Tom. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I guess you'll start seeing it if there's identifiable.
There you go.
Kind of fundamental differences between the way they look in their stance, the way they come out of their stance. Are they going straight ahead and initiating the contact, or are they going laterally and absorbing the contact? And like I said, I think I was on with you guys one afternoon, and I said I'll tell you after the second inside run period of training camp and full pads, if there's going to be a difference or not. And so, I still believe that. And I think it's going to be evident when, you know, you start seeing those types of periods and practices.
So if there is radical improvement fundamentally, and we all see it and say, oh, you know what? You were right. Juan Castillo, the savior is here. What does that tell us about what you guys have been saying, you guys being you and Olin Krutz, about how great Harry Hiestand is the last couple of years? Why didn't he fix it?
Well, Harry was a good coach, you know, and, you know, when you have that Quentin Nelson and you have Mike McGlinchey on your offensive line at Notre Dame for 4 years, you're going to get a lot of praise because you're the offensive line coach of two guys that are going to be, you know, one of the top picks in the draft and another late round first rounder. And so that type of, credibility that you're getting, other guys are going to be looking to hire you at the next level, and that's what the Bears did when they went after Harry. But, you know, I don't think all the responsibility falls on the shoulders of Harry Hiestad either. I think, again, it's a mentality that's got to be a team-wide understood, that the most important element to succeed on your team and to win a championship is the physical style of play on your offensive line. And so, you know, that's, again, Matt addressed it early, and that's another thing that, you know, we'll be able to pay attention to as fans when they do go in the training camp type practices.
Tom, when you hear a prospect on the offensive line, he played tackle in college, but he projects more as a guard in the NFL, or he can play both if needed. What does that tell you about the prospect?
That he's not so overwhelmingly good at one position that they keep him there and they, you know, they never move him around. He's a Jimbo Covert, where you're being drafted as a left tackle, you're going to be starter there from the day one until the day you leave. You know, that's one thing about this draft. I don't want experiment picks. If you have a guy that has 39 starts at right guard, then draft him as a right guard. Don't bring him in to experiment with him at left guard, left tackle, center, and all these other positions. I do think that's the quickest route to success, and is if you draft the player for the position that they've been playing. And there's a number of those guys in the draft that have extensive experience at a position that you could bring him in here and put him in an immediate comfort zone when you don't know how many actual practices you're going to have this year.
Tom Thayer with us from Bears Radio, good old number 57 on the McNeil and Parkin Show on the Score. I want to talk, hear you talk more about this physical training camp Matt Nagy is promising, and I was excited about that when he said it, but those comments were made well before this pandemic, and with the absence of OTAs, I'm wondering now if he might wind up pumping the brakes on that a little bit, because he and his assistants are going to wind up wanting to do more teaching than actually watching guys beat the crap out of each other once we get to August if there's football.
Well, you know, there's got to be a different mentality from the meeting room to the practice field, and I think right now they have the luck of technology to be able to get into these Zoom meetings and start doing the mental part of it, and then these guys have 24-hour access to their pad and, you know, access to the information, what they're learning in meetings. And if you don't know it, and then when you do get a chance to go out and have full contact practices, because when they do get on the field, you know, eventually when you have those full pad practices, you're going to have to take advantage of them. You may have fewer before the regular season, but the ones you have, man, you got to get at it, because that's going to be the deciding line in some of these guys, you know, what their future holds.
And would it be your expectation that you see the first group guys competing for those first group jobs play at length during exhibition games?
At length, you know. What do you mean by length? No,
well,
I don't.
Play
I don't
a half a couple of times.
Okay, yes. For sure. I do hope to see that for sure. Because at length, some of these guys, you see them playing into the late third and fourth quarters at time, depending upon where the team finished the year before. I do think that they're probably going to get a chance to play more snaps. And hopefully it's it's really the running part of the game that you want to work on when you have a full contact opportunity. And I do think that's what you'd want to, you know, kind of script up there if you went into a preseason game. If you get, you know, 35 plays with your starters in the first half, then give me 25 runs.
Tom, a lot of Bears fans seem to want them to take Cole Kmet from your alma mater, Notre Dame. He doesn't strike me as particularly special athletically. It doesn't look like a great tight end class. It feels like 43 or 50 would be overdrafting him to me, and that's just something that Bears fans are doing because of familiarity. Am I wrong? What read do you have on him as a prospect?
I'm kind of confused of where they want to line him up. Do they want to line him up where they have Demetrius Harris and J.P. Holtz, where I don't think he's going to get a lot of big man snaps? Or do they want to put him behind at the U tight end position and have him be a little bit more of a receiver to the outside? or the H-back fullback spot. I don't know. You know, Cole has had some injuries throughout his college career. And, again, that's the most injured position in, at the NFL level. So that always kind of worries me. But, if you can identify two defensive backs that you think that can go in there and immediately compete, this either a nickelback, a starter, a starting safety, I would be willing to go in what they have right now at the blocking tight end position rather than bringing in a tight end that early.
Ryan Pace said yesterday, we've accumulated some guys who are interesting for us in the tight end room. Yeah, 8 or 9 of them on the roster. Man, Jimmy Graham, we're all scratching our head about that. Where did it go off the tracks, in your opinion, Tom, for Trey Burton? And did you sense, double-barreled question, Mackie, did you sense that he was tired of playing football?
I think he was frustrated being injured because, you know, you're brought here as a free agent with a new head coach, and there's a lot of expectations placed on you. And you are productive that first year. You play 80% of the snaps. You play 860 plays. And then all of a sudden now when you go back to the drawing board in the offseason, Matt Nagy is thinking, okay, I got Trey Burton in this position. He's playing a lot of snaps. When we start the course of building our passing attack on certain down and distances, formations, and personnel groupings, when you look at Trey, you're talking about a guy that played 80% of his snaps, and he's included a lot. So then the next year he plays 26% and 283 total plays. I'm not blaming everything on him, but I'm just saying when you look at Trey and kind of what he was able to accomplish early and then just kind of fell off the table and starting with the playoff game, and then because you really couldn't identify what the injury was, where it was obviously in the hip region, but it seemed to be the hip region, the groin region, all, and so, you know, he just could never get on the football field and be the contributor that he was being paid to be.
Tom, you know we've been asking people for stories. You came on and told some great stories with us. I've never talked to you about your USFL days. Okay, so you laugh as soon as I bring it up. Like, I say USFL and Tom Thayer, first thing you think of is what?
Oh, man. Just so many NFL veterans that have already had a career in the NFL that are just trying to hang on at the end of that branch before they fall off. And I've learned a lot, got some great advice. You know, we had a couple guys on the team that liked to smoke at halftime. So they would sprint into the locker room, and they knew that they could smoke 3 cigarettes in 12 minutes. And I remember George Allen, they were defensive players, and George Allen a couple times wanted to get their attention, and you could see the smoke bellowing up through the stalls inside the bathroom. So it was just a different way of life because when I was in the USFL, I was playing with a guy named Jerry Sullivan. He had played a 10 or 11 years with Cleveland, and he got traded to the Bears in the Bears' heyday, and now he was playing with us in the USFL. And when we talked about me going to the Bears because they had already drafted me, he would just keep telling me how great the Bears are, how great of a player Jay Hilgenberg is going to end up being, how talented of a team they have. So the whole time I'm playing in the USFL thinking about going to the Bears, I never had an overwhelming amount of confidence just because, you know, he was telling me that it wasn't going to be an easy road, and he had the NFL experiences. So some of the lessons that I was being taught like that without those guys really knowing it, it really paid dividends for me.
Who were the best players in the league who wound up being NFL studs? I know Herschel Walker was a part of it briefly, right?
Yeah, you know, Mac, I think 2 years after the league folded, 22 of the guys were in the Pro Bowl, from Reggie White to Keith Millar to Jim Kelly to Doug Williams. To Frank Minifield, to Jimmy Fahnhorst, to Gary Zimmerman, to there's a ton of guys. You know, there's a ton of guys in there. I think when you look at a guy, the little linebacker from New Orleans in Carolina,
Sam Mills.
Complete stud. The USFL made him, turned him into a Hall of Fame caliber player in the NFL. So you had players like that that were just, you know, just dynamic football players, and they got to, you know, go into the NFL and show them their best. But you know what? I will tell you one time. So we used to fly commercial in the USFL, and we are flying back once after a late season loss from the Houston Gamblers back to Arizona. And we had a position coach and one of our offensive linemen got in a fight on the plane. And so they got in a fight, and they were falling onto paying customers and everything, and it got kind of ugly. And Frank Cush, who was my head coach the last year there, he came back and he broke it up and got them settled down and everything. By the time he got back to his seat, they were fighting again. So it was, you know, it was things that happened that would not have never not even be considered of happening, you know, at that other, at the next level, at the NFL.
The cigarettes at halftime stopped during the 85 Bears season is what you're saying?
Yeah, I never saw that going on. You know, in the USFL, I would see coaches drinking black coffee and smoking cigarettes and talking to us on the bench about the next series. So
that's incredible. Tom, I know you're going to be all over our NFL draft coverage this weekend here at The Score, so we appreciate you. We'll be listening, and we'll talk soon.
Hey, I enjoy listening to you guys, too. We really appreciate what you guys are doing and everybody else out there in the workforce. So we appreciate it also for you guys.
Thank you, Tom. Take care. Have a good day, bud.
Bye, man. See ya.
We'll see you.
That's Tom Thayer with us, our teammate from WBBM and here at The Score. Yeah,
USFL
sounds a little different.
Yeah, it was a little bit different. I remember a couple of the big money Dolphins, too, also flirting the backfield in Miami. Zonka, Kick, and Morris. I remember a couple of those guys trying to lend some credibility to the league, too, and finish their careers there. I heard back from Chico. He said he and Stephanie have never seen draft day, but Steph and his daughter have been making his pregame meal on home game days for years. So that's a tradition, but they've never seen draft day. So it was not a tribute to the pancake-eating Tom Michaels of the Seattle Seahawks in draft day.
Cody Westerland of 670thescore.com, put it on the site. That's a headline. Ron Rivera, an unintentional pancake-eating mother bleeper. Not a tribute to draft day. We're breaking news on this show. Chris Myers from the Marquee Sports Network will join us at 5. All right, Mac, I got a football theory. You can play the role of Hub Arkish and shoot it down. Are you up for it?
Of course I am. Yes.
Excellent. This is very exciting for all involved. Next on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I thought you wanted to talk football.
On the screener here, it says they have football questions.
Yeah, I got a football thought. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score, where the bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including healthcare professionals. Thank you for helping keep us safe. We're going to check in some other cities where big sports news is happening, coming up at 4 o'clock. Mac, I think we might have our COVIDiot of the Week winner as we're midway through the show on Wednesday. The guys are getting the audio put together back in the studio, but it's a doozy. So I'm very excited to share.
Yeah, but we're just getting ready to hit the turn literally for the week here at the top of the hour. So long way to go in these remaining nine holes that are the second half of Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for COVIDiot of the Week, because we see that bar get raised every day.
This might be Secretariat at the Belmont, though.
Oh, really?
I'm just saying.
Wow.
We'll see. We'll have the audio proof. I will be able to submit it to you.
Now, you chose Secretariat at the Belmont. Let me ask you why.
Oh.
Do you know why?
No. I just chose Secretariat
because at the most
that's where he won the
race.
Triple Crown, and that was the longest one, right? 22 lengths or something.
Well,
like that?
At the most famous race of all, he started very slowly. Big Red got out of the gate at Churchill Downs very slowly. Wound up winning the Kentucky Derby in record time, but he started very slowly. I believe at the Belmont he went post to post, as they say. Good call on your part.
Thank you. I think I've just heard that reference, like that phraseology somewhere.
Accidentally. You picked it up accidentally. You sounded very smart in doing so. And you know how horses get to Kentucky, too. They fly them.
Most of the time. Yeah, most of the time by plane. It's even more interesting than that. But I saw a story from Robert Griffin III, who, RG3, he's backing up Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. And he's quoted as saying that he absolutely thinks that he's going to get a chance to start again in the NFL. And RG3 is one of the best college football players that I've ever seen. He was incredible at Baylor. Deserving of the Heisman Trophy, just totally electric. Mm-hmm. And part of the knock on him, though, was not only what happened with the injuries once he made it to the pros, but it was like, it was spread offense, gimmicky offense, Big 12 defense. Like, it's just, it doesn't really translate. Even though he had some flashes of dominance in the NFL, and then it got derailed by injuries, and Kirk Cousins came in and then ended up doing his thing. But what I was thinking about was, so he backs up Lamar Jackson, who sets the NFL on fire last year as the MVP. And Tua is coming in as, you know, the mobile, undersized quarterback of this year's class. And Kyler Murray looked really good at various points in the NFL last year as the undersized guy, kind of rewriting the script on what the height requirements are for a quarterback. And he's this athlete-quarterback hybrid who you're building offenses around with what Kingsbury is doing. And I was thinking, we ascribe the label of bust to RG3. We put bust on Vince Young, even though he was a Pro Bowler and had many good moments in the NFL. And I wonder if it was really like the failings of the player, or if it was a failure of the league and the coaches and the systems. Because nowadays you ask a coach and they say a good coach bends the system to the personnel that they have.
Yes, you adjust your system to the talent you have. Right.
As opposed to back in the day, it was the guys have to sit until they're ready to play in the system that is here. And so I wonder, like, is it fair to say RG3 bust, Vince Young bust, when if Vince Young came into the NFL in 2016 instead of 2006, almost assuredly he would have been much, much, much more successful, because the NFL would have just figured out what to do with that type of talent. He would have come into a spread hybrid system. They would have ran what he did at Texas in the NFL, and he would have been successful. Like, since the NFL now is more mirroring what some of those quarterbacks were doing ahead of their time, should we retroactively go back and be like, maybe those guys weren't busts. The league just wasn't ready for them. They were ahead of their time.
Interesting question. I don't know if I would agree that that's a label you throw on those two quarterbacks expectations perhaps unmet after flashes early, but when I think of busts at the position, I think of guys who wound up not even keeping starters' jobs. And maybe that's why RG3, you know, you mentioned that Cousins beat him out, and we all know that we think Kirk Cousins is just good enough to break your heart, better than a lot of guys, but certainly not a guy you can count on. I don't know if I would consider either of those two guys busts to the same degree. Some other guys, Achilles Smith, who was drafted very, very high. Tim Couch was a real high draft pick who never wound
Jamarcus
up playing.
Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, Jamarcus Russell is another one. There have been a few others who were high first-round picks who were clearly more bust out than they were. But I don't know. I don't foresee RG3 ever being a, you know, other than getting an opportunity to play while somebody is injured, I don't see him getting another chance to be a starter.
He's 30 years old.
Yeah, and the body's probably shot, I would think. So much of his game was his hips and his elusiveness and his flash, and I don't suspect he has that anymore. So I think he's in a perfect position right where he is. He's backing up the MVP, and the Ravens figure to be very, very good again this year, I would think. And if he, you know, if they need him, he should be able to jump in and do a credible job as a backup. I think that's the ceiling for him.
Well, just okay. That very well may be true about RG3. Like, he might be wrong, and he might just be trying to speak it into existence. But I guess I wonder then, like, if you reversed it, and it's an unanswerable question. But like Lamar Jackson, we gave John Harbaugh so much credit, right? Like it's a testament to how good of a coach he is. He won with Joe Flacco, and then he wins with Lamar Jackson. Like it's right. A totally different offense. He built the system for the quarterback he had. Would Lamar Jackson, if he came into the NFL when Vince Young did, would he have had his success limited because the NFL wasn't ready for his talent? And do we have Shep? Is he able to weigh in here? Because I love when the Twitter account of my own show gets passive-aggressive against me. McNeil _Parkins on Twitter. Danny Parkins has an in-depth football thought. You'll want to listen because we're pretty sure he's about to Danny all over himself. What the hell does that mean,
Shep?
Wow. What does
you're
that
going
mean?
Full Parkins, and if you know anything, you're never supposed to go full Parkins or full Danny all over anything. So let me get this straight. Your thought is because Lamar Jackson is an NFL MVP, Vince Young is no longer a bust of a draft pick for the Tennessee Titans 14 years ago.
Correct.
Because Vince Young didn't turn into a franchise-changing quarterback. He didn't revolutionize the position the way it was played in the NFL. He had a couple of cool moments, and he played in a Pro Bowl because we know how valuable those are and how much those ultimately matter in the realm of things in evaluating a professional quarterback. He's no longer a bust.
What I'm saying is...
Yeah, he didn't say that.
The league was not ready for Vince Young in the way that the league was ready for Lamar Jackson. And
he's wondering aloud, Shep, if Vince Young would have been born 10 years later, if he would have had a bigger place in the NFL.
No doubt he would be. Like, Vince Young would have had a different NFL career, you would fully assume, just based off of where football goes. But
it's not his fault.
That long, it never just changes overnight, though. When you've seen these offenses evolve, it's a process to get to what Russell Wilson was in 2012, his rookie year. And oh my goodness, this spread thing might work in the NFL a bit. And then it goes to a higher degree of that where we're at now, of Lamar Jackson running the offense that he's running as Russell Wilson turns into less of a mobile quarterback and more of a throwing quarterback now, as some of his athleticism starts to, I don't want to say deteriorate because he's playing as well as he's played, but he's changed the kind of player that he is. It's all a process to get there. So yeah, I mean, any athletic player really in the history of the NFL that you couldn't find a spot for, you could probably make that argument, a similar argument at least for in this time.
Yeah, and I would. What does it mean to Danny all over myself? What does that mean?
It's one of your Danny thoughts. It's one of your full Parkins thoughts of, I don't know anyone else, whether it be at the radio station or in this business, that would have, at least to themselves, think this to themselves like you would. You would come up with this angle of, well, now Vince Young wasn't a bust 15 years ago because of this. I don't know anyone else that would have this thought when applying it to modern day current NFL.
Thank you.
It is a very Danny Parkins thought. I know no one else that would have the same thought process to get here.
Okay.
It's a very Danny thing.
I still don't exactly know what you mean, but I'm going to just choose to take it as a compliment.
Let me recant something I said. Vince Young was a bust.
Yes. Thank you, Dan.
I thought he was better than what his numbers are showing me. He was nothing.
He was garbage, and he somehow got on the cover of Madden because of what happened in a Rose Bowl.
Well, I remember his team's winning games, and it wasn't because of him. I mean, he had
a one walk-off run against the was it at Houston?
He had the walk-off overtime touchdown run. He was 8-2 as a starter in 0-9 when he threw a whopping 10 touchdown passes, but it was only intercepted 7 times and posted a rating of 82.8, and that's one of the better years of his career. Oof. Oof. Hit a 9-touchdown, 17-pick season.
Yeah, you know, Vince Young struggled.
With a rating of 15.8.
He threw more interceptions than touchdowns. I guess Terry Bradshaw did, too. But
yes, he did. 46 career touchdowns, 51 career picks.
But yes, I think that players are born into the wrong era sometimes. In all sports. Yes, I do. Through no, and I think the term bust.
If Patterson was born now, the Cubs, it'd be a different center fielder. It'd be a totally different situation.
Yes, because strikeouts are in vogue in today's game.
Right.
Yeah, but to know, like, the bust suggests that it's on the player. And I think that in the case of these types of quarterbacks, it is actually more, it's more of a knock on the teams and the coaches. Like John Harbaugh, his willingness to be flexible with Lamar Jackson is one of the most impressive things that we've seen in modern NFL coaching. And I don't think that Lamar Jackson would have been afforded that flexibility 15 years ago.
Well, also Lamar Jackson, I would argue, went to, not to say Lamar Jackson wouldn't find a way to succeed in other organizations, but look at what Baltimore built before they drafted Lamar Jackson. They invested heavily, early draft picks, offensive line, created one of the best units up front that there is in the entire NFL there. Invested heavily in the run game. Mark Ingram spending a bunch of money on him as a free agent and getting that to develop. And it turned into a situation where how many different teams out there are even, San Francisco would be one of them, but how many teams are out there that would be Lamar Jackson playing at the Lamar Jackson level that we saw this year besides Baltimore? There are very few.
There would have been other cities where he wouldn't have found an opportunity to get a job. And you remember as recently as 2 years ago, Brian Billick. And Brian Billick's no dummy. We cheese him because he's semi-interested in doing our show. But he won a Super Bowl for crying. And he was among those who said, this guy can't throw the ball. He's not an NFL passer. He struggles to throw the ball. He's not an NFL quarterback. I'm sure there were others who felt similarly after Jackson's first year. It was not a good start for him. But you're right. Harbaugh stuck with him and put good people around him and changed the offense.
And people now are just saying, well, so Parkins, was Cade McNown not a bust? Was Ryan Leaf not a bust? No, that is not what I'm saying. The league has done a better job of building around the unique talents of their players in the last 5 to 10 years than they did 10 to 30 years ago. And I look at a guy like Vince Young, where if Vince Young was a prospect coming into today's NFL, I think he'd be awesome. I think there'd be no reason why he wouldn't be able to be an awesome football player if he was a rookie in this class. Like, why wouldn't he be Tua? Big program, big winner, mobile, huge numbers in college, did it against good teams. Why wouldn't he be able to be considered that level of prospect? If Kyler Murray at 5'7 can be successful, why wouldn't Vince Young be able to be successful?
Well, I mean, with Vince Young, the part that he failed at ultimately is the numbers that Mac just referenced, is that his throwing ability, it wasn't on par with what Kyler Murray's able to do. It's not on par, what I'd even argue, that Lamar Jackson's able to do. And I know there's people, Hubbard-ish, one
Jeff
of them.
Fisher, he was like a drop-back passer, stay in the pocket. Like, it was the same thing that happened to Jared Goff his rookie year. Like, it wasn't built around his successes. Like,
Jeff Fisher doesn't exactly have a great track record after Steve McNair, does he?
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, so if you put Vince Young into a offense.
The question of that then is, was that system out there? Was there a system that Vince Young would have been better suited for in 2006 than in the NFL? If he goes to X team in 2006, was there another coach out there that would have handled him differently, that would have created a successful NFL career as opposed to being out of the league with a 50% completion percentage?
I don't know. I mean, we never got to see that opportunity, and we'll never get. Listen, it was a 420 theory. Okay, it's a half baked sports thought, and I think it makes a little bit of sense. Some people are getting what I'm saying on the text line. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
You know, smoking weed on occasion.
Isn't that nice?
It was. It's a thought, and I still stand by it. Players, it's on the coaches, it's on the organizations to build their systems around the talent that they have. And I would like to look back at some of those quarterbacks who just seemed like they were ahead of their time and put them in today's era. That's a thought.
I understood where you were at. Yeah, I understood your thesis. I'm not so sure I'm with you on Vince Young, but I understood what it was you were trying to say.
Chef coming in off the top rope.
Well, that's what he does. Okay.
What do you like about the? What did you not like about the Princess Bride? Everything. The movie sucked and it wasn't funny.
Did you guys watch it? I'm convinced you still haven't watched it. If that's not your viewpoint on the Princess Bride.
I've seen it many, many times.
Yeah, it's Danny loves it. I have only seen it once, and I don't remember it and need to see it again because I do like the guy with two first names. Wallace Shawn. I do like him.
Wallace Shawn. That is correct. Did you go back and watch A League of Their Own, by the way, after March Movie Madness?
I have not. No, after it got knocked out of our Movie Madness, I did not go back to it. I know I'm watching Draft Day this evening, though, if Patrick can put up with it, because tomorrow is the NFL draft, and I probably haven't seen Draft Day in a good 3 months. So
that's too
I'm
long.
Ready. I need a Vontae Max fix.
Some things,
man.
You shouldn't admit on the air, Mac. Yeah.
Can you even be a Draft Day aficionado if it's been that long?
You know, I want to say something about our conversation with Tom Theron. I know we're short on time here, but and I appreciated his answer on Juan Castillo, but. Being a valuable part. He's the Bears' new offensive line coach, succeeding Harry Hiestand. You and I both bristled when that was the first thing he talked about, when the offensive line is improved. And I look forward to a day when we start talking about what we like about the Bears' offensive line. The first name out of our mouth isn't the position coach. And we start to say, Quentin Nelson. That's where you start a conversation about your team's offensive line. Mike McGlinchey, that's where the conversation. Jimbo Covert, Anthony Munoz, those are the conversations. Not the damn coach. That bugs me that for the second straight time, it appears, we're going into a situation where this offensive line coach gets nothing but plaudits, and maybe he'll be great. I'm not saying Tom's wrong. He knows way more about it than I do, and he knows Castillo, and I trust his judgment on that. But damn it, put something out there on the field. We can say, yeah, that's our guy. That's our short yardage running lineman. We're going to run right off of his hip because we trust him. They haven't had that in years.
Well, and bring in the players so that we don't have to just talk about a coaching change. Like, the biggest thing they've done to address their offensive line is change offensive line coaches and bring in a former first-round bust of the Seahawks. Maybe he wasn't a bust. Maybe it wasn't the system. Jermaine Ifedi for the Bears. Like, let's see if they use the 43rd pick on a tackle and Ryan Pace comes out and says, we think he can be a day one starter for us. That'll be a different conversation. We'll be talking a lot less about Juan Castillo and a lot more about how Bobby Massey's not going to start anymore.
I hope that's the case. That would make me feel real good. If they take a tackle at 43, whether it's my guy Josh Jones from Houston or otherwise, that would satiate me because I think it's the most glaring need on their team. They have several, but that is as big as any.
We are going to check in with Boston to see how they're dealing with the loss of Rob Gronkowski. And people say the NFL draft really starts at 3 with the Detroit Lions. What's going on with the Lions and the Detroit mindset ahead of their big pick in the NFL draft tomorrow night? We're going to check in locally in Boston and Detroit next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.